Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Ask Us Anything edition of the Weekly Newscast. We were supposed to have five people on the show. Instead, we have 60% of that crew that was supposed to be here. Unfortunately, Chris GST had car trouble, a likely excuse. But he is not here. Neither is Brian. Brian is probably getting drunk as we speak at a barbecue in honor of Memorial Day. But Kevin Ford and Ciara Reed are here. I'm going to have to officiate and make sure that they don't hurt each other over the Skype machine here. So let's bring them in. Kevin, how's it going?
It's going well. Some higher being does not want you, me, and Chris GST to ever do a podcast again.
Niles Muldoon does not want us to do a podcast together.
Nevertheless, the show must go on and other statements,
other cliches.
Precisely.
And Sierra is also here. Sierra, you're going to be able to restrain yourself and not hurt or maim Kevin Ford.
Well, I mean, you act like I'm like Alley Cat on every podcast or something. Like, I'm very cool, calm, and collected. It's just Kevin that's a hothead.
Wow. That's a heavy shot, Kevin. Are you going to take that? Apparently he is. All right. So what we are going to do at this point is go over some results very quickly. Beyond Wrestling, they ran their gigantic show this past weekend, and some of the highlights of that show included Chris Dickinson defeating Big Damo O'Connor in the main event, as well as Jeff Cobb defeating JT Dunn. If you would like to see full results of this particular show, go to pwponderings.com/results and read about everything that happened at Beyond Wrestling. They also ran a charity event in honor of Brandon Watts. And some of the highlights included a Jonathan Gresham versus John Silver match, as well as Tracy Williams and Sugar Dunkerton as well. So a lot of really interesting things that happened. Tommaso Ciampa, Matt Riddle, what a match that is. But that was Beyond Wrestling. And again, you can check out the results, pwponderings.com/results. Progress Wrestling ran a huge tournament this past weekend, the Suplex Super Strong Style 16. It was a two-night tournament that climaxed just a few hours ago, and the tournament was won by Tommy End. There are a lot of rumors circulating around Tommy End. In fact, Court Bauer mentioned that Tommy End will be NXT-bound very soon. We will have to see how that all materializes, but we may be seeing Tommy End's last matches on the British independent circuit. But a lot of very good buzz about Progress Wrestling, as always. And I have to say, some of the more impressive things that I've been reading on Twitter include the great performances of Chris Hero, shocker of all shockers, as well as Mark Andrews, apparently really stealing the show. So not a big surprise, but definitely we'll be looking forward to seeing these shows. And I'm sure Progress, they are very good about posting their shows on their on-demand website very soon. So definitely you'll want to check that out. Smash Wrestling also ran this past Sunday. Smash Wrestling, it was announced, they will be having a sort of an inter-promotional feud or show against Progress. Smash Wrestling has done this a couple of times with CZW. I believe they will be doing this with Chikara as well. But Smash Wrestling ran their gold event this past Sunday, and some of the highlights included Johnny Gargano defeating Eric Young to win the Smash Wrestling Championship, and then Tarek became the new number one contender in the main event. Plus, Tyson Dukes defeated Mike Bailey in a match that I'm sure was very interesting and very good. And those are some of the highlights of various shows that ran this past weekend. But I do want to spend a little bit more time talking about these next couple of events. And Kevin Ford, why don't you discuss what happened at AIW's 2016 JT Lightning Invitational?
Well, give yourself a pat on the back, Jerome, because your guess of Josh Alexander winning the tournament did come true. So I believe that means he has a Money in the Bank-esque title shot at the Absolute Champion, which currently is his tag team partner, Ethan Page. So that could be very interesting. He defeated Alex Daniels and Raymond Rowe in the finals in the Elimination Three-Way. So that's a pretty big thing for Alex Daniels, who is an AIW student. to go to the finals of the J-Lit only a couple years after his official debut. So that's very impressive. They had a bunch of guest stars in there. I believe this was Hornswoggle's first set of shows since being released from WWE. He and Curt Hawkins did a tag team match or two. I think they did two matches. I think they faced a Weird World on their matinee show, and then they faced the FBI of Big Guido and Little Guido and Big Mo on the evening card. So that was probably pretty fun. Dan the Beast Severn was there. He defeated Colin Delaney in the first round. And then a second-round match had a four-way with, I believe it was Raymond Rowe, Tim Donst, and Hot Sauce Tracy Williams. And everyone spoke very highly of him, both as a competitor and a person that weekend. So lots of really interesting stuff going on in AIW. And they announced their Absolution show is the second-to-last weekend in July, I believe July 22nd. So that's their next really big event. That's sort of their WrestleMania every year. So we will see how that card shapes up in the next few weeks. So, and J-Lit always looks like really fun. Lots of really interesting matchups. And I know that they have all three shows, both nights of the J-Lit and their Back to the Future Cup they held, all are available right now on smvod.com, and the raw cuts of those shows. And then I believe they said they were going to have final edits both on VOD, DVD, and MP4 by week's end. So you know that we will be getting those shows, and Ryan Rosansky will have results of all three of those shows up on the website within the next month or so. And then for Chikara, they had four really big shows in the UK, ending in Glasgow, Scotland today. And big
and
news
I
is...
I demand that you go over the results of all four shows individually.
Not going to happen. But the big news is Hala Wicked has defeated Princess Kimberly to become the fifth grand champion in Chikara lineage, the second time he's held the title. Certainly very interesting. He is the basically the dominant Rudo with his stable right now in the group. And they did a bunch of stuff with points this weekend. You know, people won title shots and lost them. But basically coming out of it, Eddie Kingston has 3 points and a title shot. But he has to face Jaka at the next show at June 11th. So it's very possible that if he loses to Jaka, he'll also lose the title shot. No movement towards the tag titles, but the Batiri won 3 points and then lost them to NRG in the same evening. So there's a rivalry building between those teams. And they did some fun stuff with the new Chuck Taylor and the old Chuck Taylor, which continues to be one of the best storylines on the independents today. So, and I know they had a bunch of Fight Club Pro people in and out for the pre-shows and such, and people spoke very highly of those matches as well. So I'm really looking forward to these four cards when they come out. All of them sounded really fun. All of them sounded very distinct. And, you know, whenever there's a new world champion in the company, it's always big news. So, yeah, very, very newsworthy events.
For sure. And I'm curious, Kevin, what are your thoughts on the format that the J-Lit took on this year? They did something very different. Instead of having wrestlers wrestle three times on the second night, they only had to wrestle twice. Because they did four-way semifinals instead of singles matches.
Well, as someone who has been to the J-Lit, I know you have too, Jerome, I thought this was a major upgrade. It differentiates itself from all the other tournaments. And I just remember being there for night two, and I'm sitting through a 14, 15-hour card, and you just get burnt out. Like, people can argue if burnout exists or not. I fully believe it does. It's just too much wrestling for people to watch, especially if you're going to do a matinee show and a podcast right before it, and you have a 12-match card minimum the night before. So I think truncating the – you're basically eliminating a bunch of different matches and just shortening the card, freshening things up, and I'm actually all in favor of that switch. And I don't know exactly how it came off. I didn't really see people speaking about it one way or the other, but to me, I can't imagine it being anything more than an upgrade.
For sure. I think you get all your – if you want any desirable singles matches, I think you basically do that in the first round and the finals. And, you know, there's something to be said for doing some of these four ways and making the show shorter. And, you know, you also get Dan Severn and Tim Donst and Raymond Rowe in the same match, and also Tracy Williams. So, I mean, that also has a certain appeal because you are never going to see those four people in the same ring ever again.
Exactly. And I think they did a really good job kind of making different types of matches. Like Alex Daniels, the one he won, had a more the agile guys like DJZ, Alexander, while like Josh Prohibition was in there with like Billy Gunn and Curt Hawkins, not Billy Gunn and Kurt Hawkins. He was in there with Billy Gunn and a couple other people. So it was more of an eclectic mix in their matches. So they felt like three distinct matches. And they were able to do some of the dream matches, too, with eliminated guys. Like, I know in the Back to the Future Cup, they did Big Damo versus Laredo Kid. Probably another one of those matches you'll never see again. Candice LeRae versus Britt Baker sounds really, really good. And just the fun stuff they did. And they were able to do some storyline things as well, like the Pick Your Poison matches with Ethan Page and Josh Prohibition. So it seemed like instead of just having a tournament, they were also able to condense the tournament down and add some matches to build towards Absolution, as opposed to kind of shoehorning some issues into the tournament itself, which is, I think, a good thing.
So fortunately, we have lost Sierra, but we are going to try to get her back very soon. But Kevin, I also wanted to discuss Josh Alexander returning to professional wrestling. The fact that he has now been a part of this huge Alpha One show, is coming back as the champion, wrestling in the main event of the most recent show against Heidi Lovelace, and now wrestling three times and walking away with the J-Lit tournament. I mean, what does this say about Josh Alexander and his potential future in independent wrestling at this point?
I think the future is obviously very bright. I think a lot of people, it seemed to be like his name was just starting to get out there. Like he and Ethan Page had just debuted for PWG 4 months before he retired. And so I think they didn't even scratch the surface of what they could do as a team, let alone him as a singles wrestler. And I think it's apparent that when he comes back, he has a lot of buzz. He's going to get wins like this. And it might be kind of the effect of somebody coming off a run in WWE or something like that, where they're hot, they get titles or something like that, and eventually wears off. But I think the difference with Josh Alexander is we didn't see everything he could do. He left and then came back. We were just getting started with Josh Alexander. And, you know, we both watched the Alpha One show we'll talk about. But if his matches are going to be like what he had with Heidi Lovelace, then, man, he didn't lose a step from going away for a little period of time. And I'm happy to see him back, and I think the sky truly is the limit.
That's a perfect segue. Let's talk about this Alpha One show. This was my first opportunity to see Alpha One, and I know, Kevin Ford, this was for you as well. And overall, what did you think of Alpha One?
I think the presentation in terms of video quality can use a little work, and I think some of the commentary was a little bit hit or miss. But in terms of wrestling, definitely a very good show. It's one of those companies that has a very distinct roster in of itself. It's using a lot of Canadian wrestlers and mixing in some name talent, bringing up guys who are from AIW or the New England area, or even, you know, guys like a Michael Elgin or something like that to add prestige. But I think the great thing that they're doing is they're using those guys to help elevate their people, the guys that they're trying to build. For example, Michael Elgin and Shane Sabre, who I never heard of or never seen before Michael Elgin wrestled him. And I liked what I saw out of him. And I certainly would know who he was if he was in another indie company, and certainly wouldn't be opposed to him getting an opportunity. So I like what they're doing with it. But this show is very good. Lots of really excellent matches. I thought that Josh Alexander, Heidi Lovelace main event was fantastic. And I mean, the crowd reaction is proof positive of that they told a great story. It was a perfect underdog story with Heidi Lovelace going up against Josh Alexander, and her getting the win felt huge. And they set up the title match for next month right away, which I always love. And then the undercard stuff like Dijak versus Ricky Shane Page and Elgin versus Sabre. And there was an opening match with Kobe Durst, Alex Daniels, and Alessandro Del Bruno that was also really excellent. And they had a four-way match with Cheech, Cloudy, Brent Banks, and a fourth I can't remember off the top of my head. It was John Greed. He won the Hoss Boot, I think, in AIW. So again, just eclectic roster, good matches. Work a little bit more on the video quality and stuff, and I think they're good to go. But they certainly, I think, we're at a point now where I feel like they're going to soon be in the spot that AIW and AAW were in, say, like 2011, 2012. Where they weren't at the level they are now, but they were kind of making their way, and they started producing guys who became names on the indies. And I think that both of them are in elevated status since they were at that time. And I think Alpha One is jumping up into the spot they used to be in. So I think they're definitely a company that's worth keeping their eyes on. They seem to have a good thing going.
And the best part of this show was it was 2 hours long, almost exactly. And that certainly will endear you to me, because I don't like long wrestling shows. And I think 2 hours, 2.5 hours, I think that is a perfect sweet spot as far as getting enough wrestling in there to make it worth your while, but also not completely burning you out. So I really like the fact that this was 2 hours. There were a lot of different matches. I completely agree with you on some of the aesthetic qualities. They definitely need to be worked on. And obviously, independent wrestling, a lot of these companies don't have a tremendous budget. But certainly, I think the video quality and the lighting, that has to be improved as soon as possible. Because when you look at what Chikara is doing, and I know Chikara has certainly gotten its criticisms, but you know, I would say this year, there's been a huge leap forward as far as Chikara's video quality, as well as some of the technical aspects. I mean, you look at an AAW show. I mean, AAW is arguably as good of video quality as you get in not only independent wrestling, but, you know, maybe just across the board in pro wrestling as a whole. So video quality, I think, has to be a right at the top, because we have to see everything that's going on. And the commentary, I think, can always be worked on. I think that's a huge weakness for a lot of people. I don't know about you, Kemba, but there were times that I had a hard time identifying who was speaking on commentary at certain points.
Yeah, I agree completely. And I don't know if it's super important, but especially since I think they had a 3-man team keeping identifiable, you know, just even mentioning a name instead of a pronoun when talking to somebody else at the booth would be incredibly helpful, or some identifier at the top of the match. Like I think it's someone like Chikarson resets each match, especially if they switch people between the matches, just in case, like, say you put a match on YouTube or something. That way you know you're watching it and you know exactly who's on there. And yeah, and I think, you know, you're right. Indie companies don't have video, but I remember watching when FIP did their Trios tournament last year, and they would introduce all the teams from all the different companies. You'd see certain companies that felt like they were using camcorders to shoot their footage, and there was no really discernible way to tell who was who in the ring. Some stuff was whitewashed by light. While other teams submitted high-quality video, like in HD, or it was really colorful. You could see the crowd really well, and it was just very jarring. But if that's your first impression of a company, is you're only going by footage you find on YouTube or Daily Motion or just see for free, having it look good is, I think, the most important thing, first and foremost.
Let's just talk for a second. How good was everybody in that three-way in the opener? You're looking at three guys, I think, who could certainly, you know, control the Midwest and Canadian independent scene for a number of years, especially Alex Daniels. I look at him as someone in particular who has gotten a lot better in a very short period of time. And, you know, Del Bruno, unfortunately, did not get to have a long run in the States in AIW, but, you know, he's a guy who can have a huge impact. He became the Zero Gravity champion, and he is wrestling Mike Bailey at the next Alpha One show, and that has a chance to be pretty fantastic. And Kobe Durst is a guy who has done a couple of freelance shows here in Chicago. And, yeah, I really love the opener. I think it was a perfect way to set up the rest of the show.
Yeah, and he did one or two Beyond shows. I think him and Space Monkey travel with Ethan Page quite a bit. So they're extending their reach just by hopping in a car with an established name and getting spots on shows. And I think that's really big. I can always appreciate somebody who hustles and travels and tries to work hard to get their name out there. Del Bruno's run in the States was a little short-lived, but I know he mentioned on Ethan Page and Josh Alexander's podcast that he was working on getting back in the States hopefully soon. It didn't sound like it was a massive, like, legal hassle like for Silesia Sparks or Mike Bailey. So hopefully that'll happen sooner or later, because, yeah, I liked what I saw of him in AIW the few times I did before he disappeared. But I felt like he was even better, even more crisp, that he had learned and just kind of reevaluated some stuff and really worked on some stuff, and it's just a more crisp package altogether. And yeah, Alex Daniels is incredible. Like, I remember seeing him in those first matches with Joshua Singh, where those two guys kind of, it felt like it was going to be that match that certain companies in Ohio just did because they could do some cool moves and they worked together really well. But Alex Daniels has really jumped out of that AIW student label. And that's not a mark on any other AIW students, but I think you have those companies that they label guys as students and they never, ever, ever break that that label. But having Alex Daniels, he's just been working incredible matches, getting to the finals of J-Lit, and this performance of this match to really show you that he has something above and beyond a lot of what those other students have. And, you know, I don't know what that says about him or other people, but you can just tell there's really big things for him coming. And we, just like with Alexander, he's not even scratched the surface, not even what Alexander's done. He's got a very bright future, I think.
It's great to see Ricky Shane Page in the ring as well, wrestling Donovan Dijak. You know, I think there's a lot of people who talk about Dijak as a future star. And if you watch some of his Ring of Honor performances lately, I am not sure that you would get that impression, but here, I thought he looked really good. I think he's a guy that he's got all the tools. He's got presence. He's got the height. He's got the athleticism. He's just got to put it all together. I think he's just got to get more crisp. And I think working in the companies that he is going to make a difference. I mean, Donovan Dijak is working in the right places to get better. Maybe not even in Ring of Honor in some cases, but, you know, working Alpha One and wrestling Ricky Shane Page is going to help him. Wrestling Silas Young in AEW is going to help him. Doing what he does for Beyond and the New England scene in general, these are all things that are going to make a huge difference for him. And, you know, Donovan Dijak, I have no idea what his career is going to be in Ring of Honor, but this is a guy that WWE, as soon as they get a chance to get their hands on him, I think they're going to do it.
I agree completely. Like, I really only know him from Beyond, but, like, he's a consistent 3.5 to 4-star performer. Yeah. If you want to use that as your measuring tool, each and every show. I mean, he's had killer matches with Biff Busick, Eddie Edwards, JT Dunn, Chris Hero, Tommaso Ciampa, pretty much anybody you put that guy in the ring with, he has an awesome match. And I know I listed some pretty great wrestlers there, but, you know, it really does take two to tango. And he's really just grown and gotten better each and every show. And he's a guy who I get excited for whenever I see him on a card. And this is the case here with Ricky Shane Page. I like him. I like Page. I feel like they had a different match than they usually do, but also a very good one. And I'm appreciative of that. I like when somebody goes and does something a little different. They don't have to have the same match every time out. And I think both those guys are really good at making that work. So didn't surprise me. It was good. And I think you're right. I think Dijak is somebody who should be in the WWE radar very soon, but I do want to take an opportunity to plug that he will be in Virginia on July 1st for Nova Pro Wrestling against Eric Royal, a guy from North Carolina that I really don't know where he'd get the opportunity to wrestle him. So I'm happy that Nova Pro Wrestling is giving him that platform, and I'm super excited to see him in Virginia on July 1st.
Way to get that plug in there, Kevin. You're getting really good at this. You are a first-class shill. 7 years of Pro Wrestling Ponderings has taught you well.
Well, Mike King just handed me a fiver off screen, so
perfect.
I got what I came for.
So one of the things that I talked about in my review is I talked about how underrated Cheech is as a performer. And, you know, this is a guy who's been around for a long time. I mean, you were talking, I remember on the Chikara podcast recently, you talked with Mike Falcone and Bryce Remsburg. You were talking about Cheech and Cloudy having great matches in 2006 and 2007. As a team, and Cheech is still floating around. And, you know, I think there's a lot of value to having a guy like this on your roster. You know, he's not going to be the Ring of Honor world champion, but he is a guy who is excellent and consistent and has a lot of the tools that you would look for in someone who could be on the roster. And it's just unfortunate that he doesn't get more opportunities in the States. I mean, obviously AIW uses him, Alpha One uses him, but you know, I really wish more places would use a guy like Cheech.
I agree, and he just was in Chikara for the Infinite Gauntlet, and I really had my fingers crossed that it would lead to something with him coming back, and it may, you know, it may down the line, but I'm hoping that's the case, even as a singles or whether he's with Colin Delaney, or I can hope and pray that him and Cloudy put whatever differences they have aside and become a team again. That would be truly incredible to see them get another run as a tag team. A decade after they were really killing it all over the indies. And the thing that I really love is I think they did it here. I know they definitely did it in the Gauntlet for the Gold match, but it seemed like Cloudy was trying to get Cheech to do some of their old stuff, and Cheech just refused. And I'm hoping that if and when they do it, it's going to get that big pop. They just build to it and build to it, and they do something like a partly Cloudy with a chance of Cheech and some other stuff. That would be really fun. But I agree. I think Cheech is really great. It's it's a shame that he's not on more higher profile independents.
And Sierra, you're here?
Yes.
So we lost Sierra, unfortunately, but she is back. And you're here just in time to talk about the main event, Josh Alexander versus Heidi Lovelace. But what were your overall thoughts on Alpha 1's Immortal Kombat 4?
I really like the show. I don't know what it is. I always feel like Alpha 1 is always underrated or don't get much talked about. Like, you see a lot of other Canadian promotions like Smash Wrestling, you know, get thrown out there and everybody goes and watch Smash and stuff, but for, like, a while, I just felt like Alpha 1 just gets kind of lumped in with a lot of the other promotions up there, like ECCW and Smash and then PWA, and then, you know, you got Northland Championship Wrestling and all those other promotions up there. I feel like they just get lumped in with everybody else, but I always feel like their product kind of stands out, and this show, a lot of people on this card I really like, and I've been watching for a couple of years, but I was really more so into watching Heidi Lovelace go against Josh Alexander because I was just excited to see how this is going to happen, if she was really going to win this title or not, but she did, and I was so proud and couldn't have been happier.
Yeah, I mean, let's just talk about it. How good are Heidi Lovelace and Josh Alexander? I mean, if you had told me that Josh Alexander had not wrestled basically for a year, I wouldn't have believed you because he looked just as good. It's like he never left. And maybe that year off was the best thing that could have ever happened to him. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, maybe he recovered from some other injuries and, you know, sort of got to reset himself and get his mind right. But, I mean, this was a fantastic main event. And, Sierra, I know you were very happy for Heidi, so I'll let you gush about this match a little bit.
Well, like you were saying about Josh Alexander, I've been a fan of his for a long time, and I've been watching him. I want to say the first time I heard about him, even to Ethan Page, was there was this podcast I used to listen to like years ago that's like no longer in production. It was called The O Show. And this podcast took place in Toronto, and the guys that worked on the podcast used to work on the indies up in Canada. And they would talk about these guys, and I'd be like, who is Josh Alexander? Who's Ethan Page? And that's how I learned who Cherry Bomb was, Courtney Rush. That's how I found out about all these women and Jennifer Blake and Lufisto and even more people. So that was maybe, I want to say, back in 2008, 2009. And then eventually they started talking about Josh and Ethan Page more, and I was like, you know what? I need to look up these guys, who they are. Keep hearing about them. I want to know who they are. And I've been watching them for a long time, so I was one of the many people that was saddened about his, you know, out-of-the-blue retirement. And I was just like, wow, like, I feel like you just got started. Like, you were on such a big roller coaster, and now you got to go backwards. You have to get off the roller coaster before it can actually take off. So seeing him come back, and like you said, it didn't even seem like he missed a beat. Like, didn't even seem he took all a year off. Seemed like he'd been wrestling every weekend. And it just shows you that when you're actually good at it and you actually have that natural ability to be good in the ring, it's going to show regardless if you take 6 months off. You get back in that ring, it's just natural. It comes natural to you, and you're going to be in full swing. But this match, I had a feeling that this was going to be a good match because Heidi Lovelace, I can't say I've ever seen her have a bad match with anybody, even to her early years in business. Josh Alexander, I can't even say the same thing too. So I was just more so excited to see how this match came about, and then plus the build-up that Alpha 1 did, which is another thing I feel like they don't get enough credit for. Their montages, their little videos they put together to build up and hype up a big match such as this are incredible, and I don't see many people talk about them, but they take a lot of time to put this stuff together. And when I was talking about this match a few weeks ago in Roundup, I went back and watched some of those, and just Heidi Lovelace is so good at cutting promos. I don't think many people realize that there's women in this business that are so good at cutting promos, and she's one of them. And just her just saying how, like, yeah, this concussion is like the most devastating thing I need right now. I want that title, and Sleazy Spark stole that for me. Like, when she was saying that, and you could look at her face and see that she really felt like Silesia Sparks stole something from her. And then Josh Alexander had the audacity to help make this happen and take away any chances that she even had and what she's been fighting for at Alpha 1 to become the first female Alpha 1 champion. And now she can't be that because they got rid of that and shot a load within 30 seconds just to make Josh Alexander champion again and bring him back in the company as the, you know, the big villain. And that's an incredible story. You don't really see many promotions do it that way. And I love how they did that. They build up to it. Alexander coming back in the company, him and Schlesia attacking people during matches, Scotty O'Shea. Like, that stuff is so cool. And it makes you feel like, I really need to see this. But this match, like I said, the build up and just the raw emotion, you just felt like you were so invested in this. Like, this was a fight that actually mattered. Everything hard-hitting, everything that happened, I felt it, and I really, really like this. And I feel like this match has to tell everybody, like, you can't keep, I don't know, I don't want to really say, like, intergender wrestling, but I feel like there's some fans that still are in that mindset that they can't see a woman as a holding a male's championship anymore. This match shows you that this is possible. And you aren't really, after a while in a match, you don't really sit there and be like, well, she's the girl, he's the guy. Eventually, it's just two people just fighting. And this really sent it home for me. And I recommend to anybody to go see this whole show, even this match, and kind of just see that intergender wrestling is evolving from what everybody else with their stereotypes think that this is. Two people, a man and a woman, are capable of having a great fighting match, top to bottom. So, yeah, that's how I feel.
Kevin, I know that you were also a fan of the Heidi Lovelace Kimber Lee match that took place a couple months ago. And Heidi Lovelace has had a spectacular year, doing what she did at the Shimmer taping that took place back in April. You can make a solid argument that she has been one of the best performers of the year, and this was another example of it.
Yeah, I agree. And I kind of spoke about what I wanted to for the match, just as being a really good underdog match with a really hot crowd. And if they could build that story and their crowd was into it, that speaks very well of their crowd and the product they're presenting, that they're getting the same people to come back show after show and giving them stories that they can follow and sink their teeth into is really great. And the fact that they loved the match and that they all went crazy when Heidi won the title says they're doing something right.
Certainly it does. So if you would like, you could go to smartmarkvideo.com and purchase the show on MP4 or VOD or DVD. I would certainly recommend it, and I know both Kevin and Sierra would as well. So now we're going to get to the AMA. We have about 7 questions or so to get through in the next bit here. So a couple of these are non-wrestling questions. We did say we would answer anything. So, Sierra, I hope I don't leave you out in the dust too much. But the first question, Kevin Ford, I'm going to ask you this. What Marvel or DC movie would you like to see made? Any type of character or storyline, fantasy book it. This comes from Wes A.
I can't say I have a specific movie in mind, but I was just talking to somebody the other day how I really hope that so now Marvel and Disney have a relationship with Sony Pictures over being able to use Spider-Man. There's going to be a Spider-Man movie out next year. He was in Captain America 3. It was great. I'm really hoping that somehow Fox Studios will get their head out of their ass and just give them back the Fantastic Four. They're my favorite Marvel book, have been forever, and I just will never get a great movie from them until they just give them back. They've had all these failures. They just can't do it. Just give it up. It'll be fine. Keep your X-Men, keep your Deadpool, and just let the Fantastic Four come back, because What I'd really like to see is for Phase 3 of the Marvel movies, once the Avengers 3 stuff happens in a few years, is I want them to go intergalactic. I want the Fantastic Four. I want Galactus. I want Doctor Doom. I want Silver Surfer. I want Thor going interdimensional. That's the kind of stuff I want from the next, for the next phase of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And I think that starts with Fantastic Four and Doctor Doom. Really just them and it on their own or in somebody else's movie is what I want most of all.
Sierra, do you have any strong feelings about a Marvel or DC movie that should get made?
Gee, I think, Jerome, you and Brian have already known this, but I'm not into superhero movies. I don't get into comic books. I never have been. I don't know. I just never got into that part of anything. But I don't know. Like, maybe, like, if I would say, like, a cartoon or something that I would like to see made into a movie, because this is the only thing I can think of superheroes, is, like, Sailor Moon. Just kind of curious how that be with the adaptation and how they would intertwine things and stuff. Like, if anybody is a fan listening to this, I don't know if you've seen the new series and how they've changed the whole freaking story around and kind of shortened it. It's annoying because I watched this for years and now I'm just like, oh, so we're just gonna mix this out. So I'd be kind of curious how they would bring that about and how they would bring in the new Sailor Scouts and kind of tell that story. Like, I don't know, I just feel like I superhero movies, Marvel and all that stuff is great, but I feel like there's a lot of good anime and stuff like that that gets left out that could be adapted into films.
Very interesting. I really don't have a very passionate response to this, but I guess the thing that I would like to see is I would really like to see the DC Universe, just as a general rule, just get their shit together. That's basically all I want. I don't want Zack Snyder around. I want a good Batman, a Superman, a good Wonder Woman. I think that's most important. I really think we need a good female superhero movie, because I just feel like the way that because we have a lot of interesting heroes. We have Wonder Woman, we have Black Widow, we have the potential for Miss Marvel, we have Jessica Jones on Netflix, but I really think we need a well-done female superhero movie, because Elektra obviously didn't cut it for a multitude of reasons. So yeah, I think a lot of that involves the DC Universe getting their shit together. I don't know how good Wonder Woman is going to be, but based on what I saw in Zack Snyder's Batman vs. Superman, I have very little faith. And Kevin, I know you're in agreement with me on the DC Universe not really having their stuff together. And I think that's also starting to go for the TV shows as well. I really feel like the Berlanti-verse is becoming spread way too thin. And I think the 22, 23 episode seasons, I think Arrow and Flash are really starting to suffer because of that.
Yeah, I agree. After Man of Steel, I hand-waved the entire DC Cinematic Universe after I just stopped liking most every book DC did, ending with the Batman book. I hand-waved their entire comics division, and as of this season of Legends of Tomorrow, Arrow and Flash, which all really underwhelmed and just in general weren't very good or interesting, I've hand-waved their TV universe too. So I'm pretty much just becoming a Marvel and independent person in that way, and I really wish there was good stuff I could like. It's not like they've never put out anything good. There's plenty of really great things. It just feels like they make boneheaded, stubborn decisions that don't make any sense. They can't get their TV and their movie universes to talk to each other, nor their comics. It just feels like it's a mess, and they feel like they just keep starting over, that they're perpetually trying to catch up to Marvel, but Marvel had a plan. Like when Iron Man 1, before that even got written, they had a plan from Iron Man to Avengers. And now DC just keeps throwing out stuff like Batman and Superman, hoping it'll stick. And, you know, maybe it made a lot of money, but people didn't like it, and it lost a lot of money in the end. It did not nearly do what they expected. It just feels like they're perpetually playing catch-up when they need to slow down, take a breath, learn from what Marvel is doing, and make a long-drawn-out plan and go from there. And I just don't know if that's going to happen. It sucks, but they're way behind. And I know there's a lot of people who are going to keep going because they're optimistic they'll get it right. But
like I said, I've hand waved it, and until people I trust come and tell me, oh, they're really doing this great thing, I have no problem not paying attention to them whatsoever. This Dr. Manhattan thing they did is, don't even get me started. But I do also want to say that I would have Howard the Duck in the Marvel universe as well. I really liked his cameo at the end of Guardians of the Galaxy, and he would fit in well with the Galactus and all that stuff I would like to see.
Yeah, I mean, I'm in agreement with you. I think I hand-waved both Arrow and Flash at the end of the season as well. And, you know, I'm not a passionate comic book reader, but I obviously follow the superhero movies and TV shows a great deal. And it's funny to think that, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, how excited I was to have all these superhero TV shows, and I'm basically watching none of them. I don't watch Gotham. I don't watch any of the Berlanti shows. And I don't watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., so...
Really, it's just the stuff on Netflix.
Yes, and I would argue that Daredevil Season 2 is not nearly as good as Daredevil Season
1. I'd agree. It's a Lucha Underground of TV shows. Although I'd rather watch Daredevil Season 2 a million times for current Lucha Underground.
We're going to get to Lucha Underground in just a few minutes. There's a question related to this. But we have a PWG question. So, Kevin, I'm going to go to this too on this one as well. I know the feeling, and this is also from Wes, I know the feeling is that PWG has been in a bit of a creative downswing lately. Do you feel like the Ring of Honor relationship is hurting them or helping them? What do you think PWG can do to freshen things up?
It's kind of doing both, because obviously having that groundswell of talent to choose from is very helpful. I know a lot of people were really happy that Kyle O'Reilly and Adam Cole were brought back into the PWG ecosystem, as was Michael Elgin, but that had nothing to do with Ring of Honor. He just signed with New Japan. But, you know, it also gave people like Roderick Strong and the Young Bucks the ability to sign with Ring of Honor while also working PWG. So I do think it's great for those guys that they do have the freedom to work Pro Wrestling Guerrilla while being under Ring of Honor contract. I haven't seen a PWG show in a very long time, so they're the kind of results that I read and I immediately forget just because there's not a lot of storyline stuff to dig into. But would you say, Jerome, that do you feel like the Ring of Honor relationship has made it harder for them to put guys like Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly and stuff on the losing end of things? I feel like the Young Bucks haven't done like any shows for PWG in 2016.
I think Brian said there have only been like 3 tag team matches in total. I think PWG, it's tough to say that they're not doing well because they're selling out shows where they're selling tickets for $75 and $50. So PWG is not in any sort of financial trouble and they're not going away anytime soon. But it just feels like PWG, you know, when PWG really became popular in the late aughts, in the early, late 2009-2010, you know, I think there was a period of time where there was a real dearth of good pro wrestling out there. You know, Ring of Honor was sort of really struggling. You know, I think a lot of people were not interested in WWE. And PWG and Chikara really filled the void as far as excellent pro wrestling. In the year of our Lord 2016, though, with all these streaming services, with all of the great things that are going on with WWE, and we can argue about WWE storyline stuff, but the in-ring action is probably as good as it's ever been. And that's the same thing for New Japan. Again, maybe New Japan isn't the best booking, but their wrestling is as good as it gets. And you could say that about a lot of the places on the scene. And companies like AAW are basically booking PWG cards now, and they have a much better production schedule. An AEW show typically comes out maybe 1 to 2 weeks later. And PWG, I think, is really hurt by the fact that their shows do not come out most of the time until 2.5 months later at this point. And I think that's really sucky. It hurts the fans. I think it really hurts the product. And I also think PWG not putting things on VOD and MP4 right away. You know, you can make the argument either way, one way or the other, about, you know, footage and whatnot, but I am a firm believer in the idea that you have to get your content out there at this point in as many formats as possible. I mean, look at what AEW just did. AEW had a long relationship with Smart Mark Video, but even they know that a place like High Spots is going to give them even more exposure and more one more place to sell their stuff. And, you know, with AEW shooting their own footage and not Smart Mark doing it, AEW can have high spots sell their stuff. So, and that's going to help AEW. That's going to make a difference in their bottom line, because I love Smart Mark Video. I think Smart Mark Video does an amazing job in a lot of ways. And, you know, I think Mike Burns has done a tremendous amount for independent wrestling. But High Spots is just a more, for lack of a better term, high-profile place for people to buy wrestling footage. So, you know, I look at what AEW is able to do, and it almost feels like AEW has become a better version of PWG than even PWG. And I don't know whether the Ring of Honor relationship has ultimately hurt or helped, but I think there is a lot of perception out there that it has hurt. And I think Ring of Honor, especially among wrestling Twitter and internet fans, I think that it has a very negative connotation. And I think there's also a perception about PWG that the matches are really long and there's too much comedy. I think that's also something that has started to pop up with that company.
Yeah, I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. Like I said, I haven't watched a PWG show in a very long time.
Right, and I haven't watched a PWG show in a while. And maybe that's another thing, is that I don't feel the desire to go out and run out and see PWG at this point.
Right. Like, for me, I always wait for their 5 for 40 sale and stock up, so that doesn't really affect me here or there. But I also think it's really weird. It feels like PWG is getting these salads and stuff, but it also seems like it's encouraging them to do even less work. Like, they pretty much announce the matches, and they go away for a while. They really don't respond to fan inquiries at Twitter at all. I don't really check their message board because it's 2016. But, like, they didn't even do trailers for their last All-Star Weekend DVDs, and those get a ton of views on YouTube, and people wait for them. They ask about them. They really want to see the trailers to get their fix, and this time around they decided we're not going to do them, and here's your DVDs and Blu-rays 2.5 months after they happened. And I think with the way that social media is and wrestling, just the way wrestling is, like, after a week, your show basically doesn't exist anymore. You'll still get people if you release it within a month's time that'll pick it up, but after two and a half months, it may as well just have never existed. I think that's just the way it kind of works. So PWG lagging behind, like even Ring of Honor, they get their VODs up really quickly, it seems, and then the DVDs come, you know, later. And I feel like PWG doing the opposite is really perplexing with just the way that people consume media these days. But they just kind of do their own thing. They really just have these super cards that sell out in seconds, and they're still that one company that can sell a ton of DVDs. So it's not like they need to change. But after a while, like, are people just going to be like, oh, the PWG's been doing the same stuff for years, and that eventually kind of just gets people uninterested altogether? Will that hurt the bottom line? If they can, I don't know their books or anything, but like, if they didn't sell a single DVD, would their show still be doing okay? Like, with the way they charge ticket prices and however much flights and stuff costs, I just don't know all that math. But basically what I'm trying to ask is, if enough people who are DVD buyers or MP4 buyers stop buying your product because you're doing the same stuff, or you're just not being the best fan-friendly company in terms of service and communication, is that going to hurt your bottom line and make PWG not the PWG it is anymore?
Yeah, I think you bring up a lot of really good points. Sierra, do you have an opinion on this?
Well, like you guys, I haven't been keeping up on Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, and one of the main reasons why I haven't kept up on it is because, like you guys brought up, that when the shows do come out, it's months later. And to be quite honest, the most I see of Pro Wrestling Guerrilla is when I log on my Tumblr account and there's GIFs of it. And that's when I'm like, oh, the new show's out. I hardly see any social media presence from them. And I see a lot of promotions nowadays feel like they don't have to rely on social media, because maybe it's the thing that they don't want to deal with the backlash from the fans or the trolling or whatnot, whatever reason. But I notice when I see promotions like AIW, AAW, Alpha One, so many other promotions that constantly tweet out when the show's happening, when their cards are happening, when's the show going to be available for download, when the show going to be available on DVD, put out the trailers. They get not only a lot of retweets and posted here and there, but they get people's attention because they can see the information that they're looking for. Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, I feel like because they are popular and they are a great product. Never thought was anything wrong with them. I feel like because they're used to all these fans showing up, they have that reputation that it's a packed house every time, that they feel like they can just rely on that, put the shows out late, not give you much information on when the shows are going to be available to purchase, that this is going to keep helping them. But and the sad thing is, maybe a year or two from now, they're still going to be successful, but when it comes to interacting with their fans, they're going to get left in the dust. And it's crazy when I see other promotions who are just starting getting into more interacting with their fans and doing the things that they should do. And then you got a promotion like Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, who's been around the block for so long, not really gravitating or getting into that. And it's just kind of like, it's 2016. Word of mouth is not the thing anymore. It's not 1999. It's not 2000. Nobody's really trading tapes. And if you are still trading tapes, God willing be with you. But social media, retweets, all that stuff, that gets you out there faster than anything. And I was a person that refused to get on social media when I got into writing about wrestling. But I tell you, from experience, since I've gotten into social media and tweeting out my articles and stuff like that, I see the difference it makes. The feedback, I'm able to get it and understand, hey, this is a problem. Hey, here's results. It helps much better and it gets you more attention. I don't know what it is. It's like, I feel like every time I see an announcement from Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, it's dream matches all the way down the card. But then when I watch the show, I'm like, maybe it's because I like looking for storylines sometimes. I'd be like, well, what's the story here? And there's really not one, but hey, everybody is to each their own, but I feel like Pro Wrestling Guerrilla needs to really step their game up because they're getting left in the dust where all these other promotions are kind of stepping on their feet and getting better. That's crazy in 2016.
Yeah, and there's little things they can do too. Like I can say, like, Jakar announced King of Trios in March. So people like me who are driving or need to take a day off, or, you know, let's say there's people coming from Europe or across the country who need to fly and they can make their hotel and fly plans now. Like last year, I really wanted to go to Bola, but they didn't announce when Bola was till like a month before it happened. And by that point, you know, plane tickets from Virginia to California are outrageous. Trying to get a hotel booked is pretty difficult. And the thing is I understand they are going to sell every single ticket in their building with or without me. I get it. Like they don't care. They don't have to do these things. But would be nice if I could go to a show when I wanted to, you know?
I will say, regardless of what we think about PWG, we have to thank them a great deal because I'm convinced that our tweeting of their results has gotten us most of our followers.
Oh, 100%. And I'm not saying I dislike Pete. And I don't think we're going to – I don't dislike PWG at all.
I dislike them, but
There's just – I mean, obviously, like, people really like the shows, and they're going to them live, and they're selling out, and that's wonderful. That's what wrestling really is all about. But I just feel like, you know, there's other things in the periphery that could be done better.
Absolutely. So we're going to go to our next question. Sierra, I'm going to ask you this one first. What streaming services? Oh, and this is from Todd from Phil Singer Games, who I know Kevin Ford knows very well. So thank you, Todd, for your five questions, and we're going to get to those next. But Sierra, what streaming services, wrestling or otherwise, are must-haves for you?
Oh, man, I take in a lot of wrestling. So first thing first, when it comes to Joshi, I'm going to have Stardom World up there. And they just put out an announcement that they're going to be moving their content to another streaming service. So I don't know what it is, but definitely if you're on YouTube, you're a subscriber on there, get on there. If they're planning on leaving up their YouTube account, I don't know. I really don't know the specifics, but if you really want to know what's going on in Joshi, specifically Stardom, I say sign up for that account. It's $5, which is very cheap. And I think when you sign up, you get like a 2-week free trial, which is a blessing. They upload, they have a show on Sunday. All throughout that week, they upload matches, and that keeps me right on the focus of what's going on in Stardom. Also, I have, let's see, I have the High Spots Wrestling Network, Women's Wrestling Network. Those are my streaming, you know, I watch everything. Definitely WWE Live for my Shine shows. And, of course, WWE Network, but I really don't use that account. So, it's there when I want to see pay-per-views, but other than that, I leave it alone. But usually, I'm more so into checking out what the Joshis are doing, what the women's wrestling is doing. And if there's a new show, like, you know, AIW or something like that uploaded, I go check it out.
Very good. Kevin, what streaming services, wrestling or otherwise, are must-haves for you?
Oh, the otherwise is kind of confusing because there's so many. I have Netflix because I like all the Marvel shows and lots of the comedy shows and the stand-up specials they have. So for me, that's a must-have, not to mention all the movies and other TV stuff they have as a big bonus. I haven't really tried Hulu Unlimited yet. And by unlimited, I mean the part that has no commercials. But I think I've been really thinking about cord cutting a lot lately. And I think if I do, that's going to be something I give a shot just because it has a lot of network shows and stuff that goes up the day after it airs. And I think if I have that, then I think that'll make cord cutting a lot easier, especially since I know they have the truncated Raw and they have SmackDown on there as well. And if the WWE Network, if that survey has any indication, they do eventually get Raw and SmackDown on the WWE Network the day after it happens, that'll be incredibly helpful. I have the network, but I don't know if that's a must-have. Obviously, like, I watch NXT every week. I watch all the pay-per-views, and I like watching old stuff here and there, so I like having it. But the two I use the most are Chikaratopia, for obvious reasons. I really like Chikara, and I like watching old stuff. And having every show there for $8 a month is pretty sweet. And they're going to be live-streaming a lot of stuff coming up soon. I think there's going to be two things in the month of July, maybe one in June even, that they're going to be streaming for free. And their show in August from the Wrestle Factory is going to be streamed live if you're a Chikaratopia member. So I think that's going to be a service that has not yet completely finished making all the tweaks. But I think eventually that's going to be something that if you're a Chikara fan, it's going to be a no-brainer. And then I love the High Spots Wrestling Network. I think of all the streaming services, it's the best one just because of the number of content. It's got modern day AAW, CZW, WXW. It's got, I think High Spots does the best shoots anywhere. I really like the Best Friends stuff. The Diva Diaries, the few I've seen, I've really enjoyed. And even some of the hidden High Spots with Naylor have been good with some really good interview subjects. And having all that there in one place and being able to watch my Roku is huge. Like, I watched a couple CZW shows from last year. I watched a PWX show with War Games. And I'm going to watch this year's 16 Karat and part of the WrestleCon show this year very soon. And the fact that it's all there is pretty remarkable. So that's the stuff that I really enjoy watching.
Certainly, I think the High Spots Wrestling Network has become very impressive very quickly. I think Chikaratopia, if you're a Chikara fan, even if you're not a Chikara fan, it is probably a great investment because you literally have access to every Chikara show up until 6 months previous. And, you know, pretty soon, if you want to start following Chikara in 2016, now's a good time to do that because I believe they're going to start putting up 2016 shows if they have not done so already, correct?
Yeah, they still haven't put up the finale of 2015, but that should go up really soon because, you know, June's rolling around. That'll make the six-month mark. But I think starting in July, they'll start loading out the 2016 shows, and you can read mine and Jerome's reviews of those and decide if that's something you're interested in.
Absolutely. You know, I think Netflix is pretty much mandatory. I think as far as the quality of programming that is on, I think Netflix does the best job. I mean, I look at Netflix's schedule for the rest of the year, and, you know, there's almost a show that I want to watch every single month, and that's pretty solid. Hulu and Amazon, I think, still have a lot of work to do. I still think Netflix is better than those two. For me, HBO Go and HBO Now, I think those are mandatory just because of Game of Thrones and After the Thrones and being able to watch movies on demand. HBO is really important, as well as watching John Oliver, because I love me some John Oliver. Yeah, WWE Network, of course, because NXT, The Takeover. You know, even though WWE is a mixed bag, especially with Raw and SmackDown, generally the pay-per-views and the NXT takeovers make it worth your while. So, it's really tough to argue against the WWE Network at this point. But I mean, there's so many streaming services, and you know, if you are a cord cutter in particular, you know, you're going to be looking at something like a Sling TV. Kevin, have you heard of this?
Yeah, I've heard of it. I think I've heard of that in some other similar places.
So cord cutting, it's, I mean, I recently read something that since the month of February, ESPN has lost 1 million homes that it once had access to. That is incredible. So cord cutting is real, everybody. And, you know, a service like Sling TV is going to be able to bring network TV into your home. And, you know, there's CBS is going to have their thing soon. So having a good internet connection is going to be much more important than having your Dish Networks and your DirecTVs and whatnot. So it's pretty amazing. I mean, the amount of live TV that I actually watch is pretty insignificant. Unless it's a sporting event, the odds are pretty good that I'm either watching something on DVR or I'm streaming it. I don't know, Kevin, are you in the same boat?
Yes, I definitely am. Also, I can hear myself in someone's speakers.
That is what might be me or Sierra. Depends whose microphone needs to be muted.
Yeah, somebody.
All right. I will make sure to do that. So our next question.
Well, before we go on, I just want to say, can you imagine if, like, Ring of Honor had something like Chikaratopia? Like, I'd subscribe to it out of principle, having every single Ring of Honor show at my fingertips ever.
I mean, WWN, Ring of Honor, and PWG, if they streamed everything as well, I mean, you basically would have everything you would need to know about independent wrestling over the last 15 years at your disposal.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I think, CZW has something pretty similar. There's older PWG shows on the High Spots Network, too. That's obviously a huge thing. Having modern ones would be awesome, of course, but I completely understand the reasons why they don't. But I know, like, a company like Smash Wrestling, who has their own network, I believe they do put up their newest shows on their channel at the time. So I know when they do Smash versus Chikara in July, I will 100% be buying at least a 1 month subscription to the Smash Network so I can check out that show.
Yes, and Progress also does the same thing, and Revolution Pro also does that as well. So, mm-hmm. And I'm a firm believer that these European companies have so much buzz, specifically because even though it's in Europe, that we have such easy access to the shows. I mean, we can watch Progress, you know, 1 or 2 weeks later, and the same thing for Rev Pro, and that's huge.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And Beyond Wrestling does the same thing. They pretty much have raw footage of their shows on Beyond Demand, which is through YouTube, obviously a channel that everyone knows and doesn't have to learn how to use. That's really helpful as well. And they do raw footage of their shows just days after they happen before putting the final edits on there. I know AIW and AAW have their services that has a lot of archived content. So, yeah, there's a lot of streaming services out there. So if you're like, oh, man, I don't have that much great indie wrestling to watch, you're crazy. Or just not trying very hard.
Certainly. I mean, I think we've just about covered every streaming service in the world. So let's talk about this next question. Sierra, I'm going to go to you for this one as well. What kind of lasting impact do you see Lucha Underground having on the way wrestling will be presented in the future?
Wait, say that again? You're cutting out.
What kind of lasting impact do you see Lucha Underground having on the way wrestling will be presented in the future?
I think they're really going to have a lasting impact, especially their production, how things are presented, and their storylines that I'm not like a constant watcher of Lucha Underground, but one thing I say about when I do watch it, the way things are presented, I feel like sometimes with wrestling, especially with televised products, we got so into give me this now, and then the next week we're moved on to two or three different things as opposed to just keep building upon something that started and was buzzing. And Lucha Underground, I feel like they've been able to do that and keep piling it on and keep making you wait for cliffhangers and seeing how things are going to go down the long run. And one thing I know that probably is going to have an impact is with the women, the way the women are presented on the show, like Sexy Star, like if you're not really familiar with her, she wrestled in AAA for a number of years, and I've talked about this in a roundup for a long time about how why I don't cover Lucha Libre, and the reason why I don't is because when it comes to CMLL and AAA, the women are in the same six-man tag every week. Now they've kind of switched it up. They bring in more girls, but it's the same redundant match, the same redundant formula. Rudos, baby faces over here, and stuff like that. There's nothing really much to it. And when you have a women's champion down there, you actually wouldn't even think there is a women's champion because they really don't present them that well. But when she got on Lucha Underground, they made her seem like this big deal, and she's going in there fighting the guys and stuff like that, and she's been made to look like an equal to everybody else in that product. And I think when it comes to down the line, a lot of promotions, companies on television are going to see that and say, hey, this is possible, and maybe there might be a time where we might see WWE, TNA, whoever else gets on television, we might start seeing men and women wrestle. It might become a normalized thing, especially with Lucha Underground presenting it to us that this can happen. We just seen her and Mariposa have a bloody match. Who would have thought they would have seen something like that? So they are stepping over the line and doing things a little bit more edgier that people said you can't do on television. But now they're showing you that you can do it. I feel like some people are stuck in the Attitude Era and feel like the Attitude Era went far enough. But Lucha Underground is showing you that you can go even farther, especially when it comes to Lucha Libre. And people always think Lucha Libre is just the same style. You can't really do much with it. It's just flips. It's all this stuff. But they're showing you that there is a lot you can do with Lucha Libre. And there's a lot of people that are luchadores who are just incredible and give great service to any promotion. Like, a lot of those guys that work on Lucha Underground, like, could you say yourself, like, especially if you didn't know, did you think that you would be seeing some of these guys pop up in PWG, working AAW, Absolute Intense Wrestling, all these other promotions, like, before Lucha Underground, some of these guys we had never even seen. Pentagon Jr. is amazing. And he's every freaking where. Some of these guys are going overseas. So it's really opened up that market. And it's got a lot of people's attention there. And in the long run, it's going to help benefit a lot of people.
Kevin.
I actually don't think it'll have much of any impact at all. I don't think we'll ever see intergender wrestling ever in WWE or any other national TV product. I think the only really change you'll see is they might poach some of their talent. And they might revamp their backstage stuff, but otherwise, I think Lucha Underground is a cool thing that internet people like, but will have no effect on wrestling as a whole.
I think influential. I think the style, you might see more Lucha incorporated into WWE and across the independents, like I think we have been seeing. I can't speak to Kalisto being directly impacted by Lucha Underground, but you could certainly make an argument that Lucha Libre has gained a lot more traction in this country. Look at the fact that AAA won King of Trios last year. I think the fact that Kamitachi is making the appearances that he is for Ring of Honor and PWG, I think that also has an influence. I mean, look at Drago, look at Pentagon Jr. So I think as far as the wrestlers and the style, I think it absolutely is going to have an effect on the way wrestling is presented. But there is a reason that Lucha Underground is losing the amount of money that it is, because it is incredibly expensive to do some of those backstage segments that they do. And, you know, it's very high-quality production. It looks tremendous, but I can't ever see WWE transitioning over to that because of how expensive it is to do on a weekly basis. And, you know, WWE is in a very different position because, you know, they're producing three-hour Raws every Monday, two-hour SmackDowns, and all of that is going to eventually be live. And that is incredibly difficult to do on a weekly basis. So I just don't think, and you're definitely not going to see that in TNA or Ring of Honor because they're never going to be given the budget to be able to do that. So you're really not going to see much of an influence on the production side, but you're certainly going to see more Lucha Libre. And, yeah, I really don't see intergender wrestling ever crossing over into WWE or Ring of Honor, because as corporate owned entities, I don't think it's going to work. I don't think they're ever going to be able to get their heads around the idea of, you know, having women interact with men. I just don't think it's going to work out for them. And maybe it sucks that that's not going to happen, but, you know, I think there are times when it doesn't work for Lucha Underground either. You know, Sexy Star beating Pentagon Jr. was a colossal mistake. And that's not because Sexy Star is bad, but they completely missed the boat on Pentagon Jr. I think, and they continue to do that, because he is one of the most charismatic guys, and WWE is going to poach him at some point, and hopefully they make a lot of money with him, because I think especially with that community, with the Latino community, I think he could be really huge. All right, if there's nothing else, another question from Todd. Kevin, I'm going to go to you first on this one. What 2017 movie are you most looking forward to? Some of the movies that are coming out in 2017 include Star Wars Episode 8, Guardians of the Galaxy 2, Spider-Man Homecoming, Transformers 2, as well as Thor Ragnarok. But Kevin, what 2017 movie are you most looking forward to?
You said it, Guardians of the Galaxy 2. I think of all the Marvel movies, it really depends on the day or the recency effect and all those things, but I can pretty much lean on Avengers, Cap 2, and Guardians of the Galaxy as my three favorites. They're kind of the tentpoles as well, and Cap 3 has kind of entered that discussion for me as well. But Guardians certainly was the most unique, and I just had so much fun watching it. And they're doing another one, and I can't wait. I'm more of a Marvel person than even a Star Wars person. Obviously, I'm going to go see Episode 8 in theaters, but Guardians 2, by a long shot, though, Spider-Man also has my attention.
Sierra, what 2017 movie are you most looking forward to? And if you need a list, I can send it to you, and I'll give you some time with the list if you want.
Oh, you're probably going to have to send me a list because all these superhero movies, yeah. All right, come out all you want. I'm not coming to see it.
I have sent a link to you, Sierra, so you can look it up. The 2017 movie that I'm most looking forward to, you know, I think it would be easy to say Episode 8. And certainly it is a movie that I'm very much looking forward to. I'm a huge fan of Rian Johnson, who is the director. He directed the movie Looper, which is a very, very good film. So I'm very excited for Star Wars Episode 8. But Captain America Civil War made me really excited for Spider-Man Homecoming. I'm all in on this movie, and the potential casting of Michael Keaton as Vulture has me really intrigued. And I'm in disbelief because I have not been a fan of the last three Spider-Man movies. But once the Marvel Cinematic Universe got its hands back on Spider-Man, Kevin, I'm all in on this movie, man. Like, I think Guardians of the Galaxy 2 could be good, but there's also a part of me that thinks it's going to be really hard to recapture the magic of the first one. But certainly it's, you know, I'm certainly going to see it, and I'm certainly hopeful in thinking that's going to be good. But, man, Spider-Man Homecoming, I think that's got the potential to be something really excellent and really reset the Spider-Man universe as well, because I think a lot of people have a bad taste in their mouth. But I think anyone who saw Civil War, I can't imagine not being excited for Spider-Man Homecoming, as long as we don't get to see Uncle Ben shot again. There's two things and two people that I do not need to see die again. That is Uncle Ben and Thomas Wayne. I don't need to see those guys dead on my movie screen.
Agreed. I thought the way they treated Spider-Man and Cap 3 was perfect.
Sierra, do you have an answer for me yet?
Only movie I've seen so far that I'm somewhat interested in is Beauty and the Beast. And I don't know, maybe because that was like one of my favorites as a child, but Disney and these new and adaptations with these fairy tales is like getting out of hand. Like, they've done almost everything now, so this would be kind of cool to see how they make the Beast look and whoever's going to be playing Belle.
It's Emma Watson playing Belle, by the way.
And how they're going to... Wow, I'm just like, I want to see a teapot and everything talking. Like, yeah, this is a little bit crazy, but it sounds saw like something, I'd just be like, oh, they really did that. But yeah, I'm not a superhero buff, so.
So basically, you're not seeing any movies in 2017.
Pretty much. If it's not a Captain Planet movie, why bother?
So these are some of the movies that are coming out. And Kevin, I want your instant reaction to some of these. Resident Evil, the final chapter.
Yeah, I couldn't care less.
John Wick 2, Chapter 2.
I never saw John Wick.
John Wick is really good. It is a perfect cable movie. It's not something that I would say go see in the theaters, but if you have HBO or you're able to see it, it's worth a watch. It's an excellent action movie. The Lego Batman movie.
Potentially could be good. I will probably see that.
50 Shades Darker?
Didn't know that was a thing. Certainly will not see it.
Wolverine 3. I know you're definitely seeing that.
Oh, big thumbs down.
Really?
For Wolverine 3? The other two Wolverine movies were horrible.
The second Wolverine movie was had its it was good, I would say.
I don't agree at all.
I mean, the first one is really, really bad. The second one had a lot of good moments. But this is apparently Hugh Jackman's last time as Wolverine, so...
I'll wait to hear feedback on that one.
Power Rangers.
Don't care. Leave that in the past.
Hey, now.
I'm really tired of 90s stuff. Like, Ecto-Cooler was a terrible drink. Who cares? I don't care about Fuller House or Girl Meets World. All that stuff was garbage then, and it's worse now. Leave it alone.
They're 40th season of Power Rangers at this point? Right now, they have the Dino Charge going, and I'm just like, wow, we went in space, we were ninjas, now we're with dinos. It's just... really intriguing. I just think it's just fascinating when every time they get a new set of them, they have different colors. Like now they have a purple ranger. A purple ranger. God.
I mean, you look at some of these sequels. I mean, we're literally in a world. Next year we've got another Smurfs movie.
Why?
Fast 8. We've got Barbie. Baywatch. Another Pirates of the Caribbean. Bad Boys 3. Wonder Woman. Transformers 5. Despicable Me 3, Jumanji.
No.
My God, Kevin, what the hell's going on?
I will say I actually really enjoyed Furious 7.
I did too.
So I'm probably going to go see Fast 8.
I will probably see it as well. But I mean,
but yeah, no, we're in a world where it's all sequels or reboots or just people taking IPs and making movie out of them. There's really very few creative ideas now, and it's really sad.
Outside of the last 4 months of the year, you basically get all of the creative and good movies in the last 4 months before Oscar season.
Yes, exactly.
And then it's like everything is just put released, and then you end up missing stuff.
But is there actual need, or was anybody waving their hand and asking for a sequel to Annabelle?
So, no, but the theory is that a lot of these movie studios are so desperate that they're going to take any piece of IP that has any credibility whatsoever because they know that the name and the characters are going to draw a certain audience no matter what. And that's why you see a MacGyver TV reboot. That's why you see a Fuller House. That's why these things get rebooted because there's an audience for them. If there wasn't an audience, then you wouldn't see a lot of this stuff, but...
Yeah,
it's only going to get worse.
Yeah, I kind of agree with Kevin. Just, like, some things you just kind of just have to leave in the past. Like, you know, on television, they remade Roots, and it's just like, do we have to remake this? This thing was long enough the first time. Like, it's just like they get stuck on one thing, and they want to remake it, and Bad Boys 3, like... I thought the second one was enough. That was the time in between. I feel like there was no need to do a sequel, but they're doing a third part.
The crazy thing is that we're going to get a Men in Black and 21 Jump Street crossover.
That I'm actually kind of excited about.
I mean, but
and
I just...
And has nothing to do with Men in Black, by the way. I really like 21 and 22 Jump Street.
I mean, I did too, but come on.
Well, hey, look, I'm going, all right? That's all I'm saying.
You're all in.
Is it the same guys who wrote 21, 22 Jump Street, Last Man on Earth, and Lego Movie?
I believe it's the same writers, yes.
Well then, goddamn, I'll be there.
All right. Yeah,
there's just a lot of stuff that needs to. It was, and it had its time and place, and it needs to be left there.
Like
Power Rangers is definitely that for me.
Like you know what? We don't need an ECW today. We don't stop.
Blasphemy, okay. Kevin Ford. Blasphemy.
Okay. You guys that disagree with Kevin, you send those tweets to Kevin. Do not hit this one, because I know you say that. There's a fan base that does not want to hear that.
Oh, I know. But listen, ECW was great. In the 90s. It's 2016. We're
everything has their time and place. Like, there's no reason to remake Baywatch. Like, I felt like after the 90s, we didn't need to see that. Like, come on. Like,
again, it's about the IP. That's why you see
Chips
making
Chips.
I'm not disagreeing with you, but I'm saying I'm presenting to you the business argument for why all of these things keep getting remade, because there is value to the intellectual properties, and that's why this stuff gets made. Why, there's a reason that Disney bought Star Wars. They did not buy Star Wars so it could sit on a shelf. They bought it because there is value to releasing a Star Wars movie every single year for the rest of our lives. And, you know, Disney basically has a ton of this intellectual property because they know that there's value to it. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just pointing out the business reality of being in the film business, that there are no middle-of-the-road movies anymore. There are no $40 to $50 million movies. Everything is either a big budget $100 to $200 million film, or it's getting made for, you know, pennies on the dollar.
Well, the good thing at least with Disney is they do own a lot of IPs, but so far they're doing a really good job with the ones they have. I don't really know people who say the same thing about Transformers, and not that many people who are super stoked for Ghostbusters. Things that are just, you know, they're there. The reason they're called those is to just get the people who love those as a kid to go see them again. You know,
there's not a lot of people look forward to Transformers, but there's a lot of evidence that suggests there are people that like Transformers.
Yeah, but nobody's letting. But there's, you can't tell me there's a huge group of Transformers fans who are like, these movies are amazing.
I don't like them, but I think there are a lot of people who legitimately and unironically love those movies.
I don't believe you.
There's been four of them, and they've all made. Have been like top 10 movies of the year box office.
Well, I'm still not going to believe you.
I am convinced that we're out to lunch on this one, and that in our bubble, nobody obviously likes the Transformers, but there is a huge audience for it because there wouldn't be a fifth Transformers otherwise.
Yeah, I agree, but if you titled that movie Steelbots Fight or Real Steel or something like that, no one would care.
Probably not, but I think there are people that actually love those movies, as crazy as that is.
Yeah, that's sad. And I get it, because, oh, my childhood! But shut up, you're an adult.
Gosh, Kevin, you're such a Debbie Downer.
I just hate hearing this stuff like, oh, the new Ghostbusters ruins my childhood. You're like 30, shut up.
Well, I mean, I guess when you see something from your childhood and you don't see it being presented as the original thing, but it's kind of funny because it's like, I don't know where people get off thinking that it's going to be the same thing when you take a cartoon or something like that and make it into a film. Like, it's not going to be the same thing. It's going to be completely different. It's people's expectations are weird, but I got another one. As far as it goes as biopics, I want to say the All Eyes on Me, Tupac biography. I don't know what it is, but I'm kind of intrigued by it, especially the cast that they're picking.
And it's interesting because a movie like that gets made because Straight Outta Compton does $1 billion in its run of theaters, and you're going to probably see a bunch of those types of movies pop up. You're probably going to see a Run DMC movie, a Public Enemy movie. You're going to see all of that stuff. Not Johnny Grunge and Ted Petty's there, Kevin Ford. I know you were lying in wait.
I actually didn't even think of that joke, but which is funny as I was just talking about ECW. But hey, listen, if those movies are as good as Straight Outta Compton, I will go see them.
Yeah, and I feel like the production value and everything is going to be just as good, and
I mean, if it is, keep on rolling them out.
All right, so we're going to move on to the next question. This is an interesting one. I'm very much looking forward to your responses on this. Kevin, I'm going to go to you first. What three non-WWE contracted wrestlers will gain the most out of the WWE Cruiserweight Classic?
Akira Tozawa will get signed as soon as that thing is over. Justin Houston and I have theorized that he will never win the Open the Dream Gate title because he will go there, he will win the crowd over so hard, and they will sign him. Zack Sabre Jr. probably. I think a lot of people kind of peg him as the next Bryan Danielson, and in all the best qualities, not so much the concussions, early retirement qualities. And I think he'll have somebody like William Regal's back, and probably Triple H and them hopefully will be impressed by him and give him a contract afterwards. I also think I really see somebody like TJ Perkins doing really well. I think he has a nice aesthetic to him. Like all these guys that they're bringing in have really great wrestlers, but I think him and Tozawa stand out as being a little flashier, having a little bit more character, while also being really great wrestlers. And I feel like he has potential to really break out and do well for himself and stand out amongst the pack of the Cruiserweight Classic. So that's my three. Akira Tozawa, Zack Sabre Jr., and TJP.
Sierra.
I'm going to go with Zack Sabre Jr. And I also want to say Akira, too, because I feel like he's... I don't know what it is. I just feel like not many people really get to see this guy. They hear about him, but they don't get to see him. So I feel like that guy is right there on the mark. Another person... I don't know. I would say TJ Perkins, but... I don't know what it is. I just don't see them signing him right away. Maybe Gulak? Those are, like, my top three.
My concern with TKP is I wonder if his social media is going to get him in trouble. That's the thing that's holding me back from saying him as well.
Who will it do the most good for doesn't necessarily mean getting signed by WWE either.
Right. That is also true. I didn't even think of Akira Tozawa, so I'm going to go with my original three. Sabre Jr. is the boring answer, but I think there's a reason that he has been so prominently featured in some of the advertising and mentioned so early by Triple H. I think he's going to be signed as soon as the Cruiserweight Classic ends, and it would not surprise me if he won this tournament as a whole. So we'll have to see how that develops. For me, I think Cedric Alexander is definitely someone that I'm interested in seeing. You know, Tommaso Ciampa, he left Ring of Honor, and he got a million times better, and he was super motivated, and he really did not get the best opportunities in Ring of Honor. I feel like the same thing is going to happen with Cedric Alexander. I feel like we are going to see the best of Cedric Alexander now that he is no longer in Ring of Honor. And I feel like he's going to be super motivated, and I really think that he is going to step up in this tournament and just be exactly what we all would hope. And for me, I think...
Is Cedric officially in it?
I don't think he's... I don't know if he's been officially announced, but I think it's all but official, I think.
That is wonderful news. Anyways, I'm sorry, continue.
And my third one... Drew Gulak is my third choice. I just think even though he has a very different style than what is typically associated with the Cruiserweights, I think Drew Gulak is going to get every opportunity to excel. Drew Gulak is a guy who can step in the ring with anyone and have a good match, and I think he is going to serve that purpose in spades in the Cruiserweight tournament. And I think people are going to get a whole new appreciation for the catch point or grapple fuck style, whatever you want to call it. And I really think Gulak is going to be someone that walks away from this tournament. I don't know if he's necessarily going to be signed by WWE, but I certainly think that Drew Gulak is a guy that a lot more people are going to become aware of because of this. And, you know, Akira Tozawa is a great name, TKP as well. You know, there's a lot of arguments that can be made. I will be interested to see who gets signed, and Tozawa is probably at the top of the list, because that guy is just a ball of charisma, and it's going to be really hard to hold him back. And it feels like Dragon Gate doesn't use him all that well sometimes. And they might regret it.
And you know, there's something to be said. Even one thing I didn't even consider with Gulak is like they're going to get a chance to do Drew and Biff in this thing. They're going to get a chance to do Drew versus Champa in this thing. Not to mention Gargano and Swan. And, you know, Swan and Tozawa are very familiar with each other. So this is really going to be a chance for them to go in there with these guys that they're familiar with, who they've had excellent matches with in the past. And I can really see Biff versus Gulak being one of those matches that people who don't know don't expect much out of, and then are really blown away by it. So that could really be one of those matches that puts him on the map in the right people's eyes as well. I didn't even consider that until this question came up.
There's a lot of potential, and I am very much looking forward to this Cruiserweight Classic that will be taking up most of the summer. Our final question from Todd: what under-the-radar indie fed will rise in stature the most on the next 12 months? Kevin, you are not allowed to answer Nova Pro Wrestling. I'm sorry. I'm going to put a restriction on you for this one. But
well, I mean, it's just so obvious that it's going to, that me even saying that is really just a waste of breath.
So very funny.
So I appreciate you saying that, but I mean, is it cheap to say Alpha 1? I mean, I kind of explained earlier that I feel like there is different hierarchies in the indies, and I feel like at one point you had AIW, AAW, Beyond, and maybe a couple others I'm forgetting, on a certain tier below your CZW, Chikara, PWG, Evolve, and I feel like the gap between all those companies is not as big as it used to be. Arguably, they're even on the same level on a lot of those companies, which speaks very highly of those guys. And I think A1 is one of those companies that I really know that has gone and stepped up. But I can say, since I already kind of mentioned that earlier, I really hope that I'll put them both in the same category, that PWX and CWF Mid-Atlantic are two that rise in that way. CWF has a weekly televised show on YouTube. That's really good, and it features your guys like Trevor Lee and Cedric Alexander, and occasionally your Andrew Everett and some other really excellent wrestlers. And I think, and I hope that that platform is going to help really bring some just get more eyes on people from the Carolina area. And I think PWX, including a different batch of wrestlers, but even some of the same guys, and mixing them in with your Cedric Alexanders, your Chris Heroes, and guys of that ilk, will hopefully raise the profile of that company as well. And I think making every one of their shows available on the High Spots Network can only do them a benefit. So since I talked about A1 kind of getting at that spot earlier, I'll say PWX and CWF Mid-Atlantic together.
Sierra?
I don't really know one specifically, but I feel like, you know, like Kevin said, there's not much of a gap between all these promotions, and I don't know what it is, but I feel like the California scene and the Northeast is going to have one of those promotions that come out of nowhere, and everybody's just going to be attacking them. And in the Northeast, you're having a lot of promotions set up shop, and I feel like the ones I've been seeing a lot lately is more so Game Changer, being all over my timeline, that and House of Glory. And I feel like when those two out of nowhere, it's going to become a thing where everybody's just going to be paying attention to one of the two. And on the Cali scene, I feel like there's so many promotions that I can't really pick out one, but I feel like there's going to be another promotion that comes, and people are going to be paying attention to it as probably just as much as they pay attention to Pro Wrestling Guerrilla. I feel like it's time for other promotions to kind of get their just due, especially if they put out the high quality production. They have the great matches. They have the great talent. And especially if they have up and comers who are not really known and become a big thing in other promotions, that really helps. So, yeah, I really don't know. It's just so many out there. There's like, what, a million indie promotions at this point now?
Roughly speaking, yes.
And then if you count Japan, and then you count Mexico, and you count Puerto Rico, and then Canada, yeah, there's a lot.
Certainly, and there are two companies in particular that I thought of right away when I heard this question. The first one is a Chicago company. Freelance Wrestling is certainly a company that I could see in the next 12 months really rising up the ranks and being regarded as one of the marquee independents. You look at some of the quality of the talent that they're bringing in, and, you know, even though I am not a fan of CZW, obviously, bringing in CZW is going to add a lot of exposure to freelance that they otherwise would not have gotten. They are bringing in some very impressive talent from around the country. You know, they're able to bring in guys like Ethan Page and Ricky Shane Page and, you know, some other folks as well. So freelance wrestling is definitely someplace that I could see rising up the ranks of independent wrestling. And the other company that I want to mention, Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment. Once they start getting their footage on Smart Mark Video on the regular, because that's been one of their biggest problems, is the accessibility of footage. But you look at some of the things that they have been able to do recently, some of the quality of the talent that they're bringing in, it is definitely a reality that Southern Wrestling has been excellent the last couple of years. And in addition to PWX and CWF Mid-Atlantic, Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment is also one of those places that, you know, they're bringing in guys like Kip Day and Jimmy Rave and using these guys to the best of their ability. And there's so many guys. I mean, they're using guys like David Starr really well. They're bringing in Kimber Lee and Sugar Dunkerton. And those are the two companies that, when I think about prominent indies that are going to rise up the ranks, those are the first two that come to mind for me. And, you know, there's certainly a whole host of others. I mean, even though I did not let Kevin Ford say it, I mean, you can look at a promotion like Nova Pro, you know, the fact that they can run Virginia and, you know, sort of make a stake in a place that really doesn't have a lot of independent wrestling, you know, that also makes a difference. And, you know, with so many guys under contract to Ring of Honor and New Japan, it really leaves the door open for these independent companies to take advantage of some of the talent that is not under contract. And in some ways, it makes them more creative and allows them more freedom. So there are lots of independents that will hopefully rise up the ranks these next few months. But definitely, I see freelance and Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment right at the top of the list. Kevin, any other thoughts on this?
Well, the other thing freelance does is I believe they stream almost all, if not all, of their shows live on their website. And it's one of those things, I think, where if you're home on a Friday night and you want to watch some live wrestling, it's basically a free iPay-per-view. And it's if you watch it live, great. If you don't, it's going to be on Smart Mark Video for you to buy. And I think just getting footage available to people, free or not, is such a huge thing for just exposure. And I feel like people have a mentality like, you know what, freelance gave me that one for free, I'll buy their next one. Or I'll buy a ticket to their show, or I'll buy a t-shirt.
And if the stream dies, then oh well, right?
Yeah, it's free. Like, they did you a solid. I mean, I don't know how much you can really complain if that happens. I mean, I don't know. But yeah, I think that's a huge, another beneficial thing is the guys that you may not have heard of, they're letting you see, they're giving you that first taste for free and letting you get acquainted with your four-star heroes and your Isaiah Velasquez's and guys of that nature. You know, it's what I feel like that's a great thing about independent companies. It's, you know, for them, it's like you come for the Eric Cannons and Sugar Dunkertons, Robert Anthony's, but you stay for the other guys that you get used to. So when the guys you do know aren't there every single month, you like the other guys too. And I think that's just a smart way to do business for independent wrestling.
All right, so those were the questions, and of course we want to thank Todd and Wes for the questions, and hopefully we'll get a chance to do this again, and next time Chris and Brian will be here to answer all of the questions. Kevin, we got to make it happen. The three of us have to be on a show. We have to counter anything that Niles Muldoon can possibly do and make this happen.
We might have to wait till the end of the season, then, of Jakara for that to happen.
All right, before we get out of here, we are going to plug our stuff and our websites and our Twitters. And Sierra, I'm going to let you go first.
Well, as always, you can find me on Twitter, CIRA9218. And I'm working on a new Rainbows Roundup, and I'm currently updating results, which takes the longest. Believe it or not, that takes the longest to compile. And that should be up later this week. I'm not really sure if I'm going to talk about the big stories because I have so many ideas, but yeah, look out for that one. Anything else? Not really.
Kevin Ford, you don't do anything, right?
Nothing. I just exist. No, you can follow me on Twitter personally at kford13.
If you like Chikar, you can follow at Chikar Special on Twitter. That's the dissemination point for the YouTube channel, the review blog, and the Tumblr I all run. That all gets put there. And you can find individual links to there if you want to follow that instead of on Twitter. Speaking of Chikar, I do a podcast for Pro Wrestling Ponderings called Viva Chikar with Justin Houston that comes out right before Chikara holds shows on weekends. And since Jerome was gracious enough to have me on the newscast, he will be joining Justin and I for the next episode of Viva Chikara, which will be out next week. Yes, that is correct. And also on... Say what?
Next week. That's crazy.
That is crazy. We don't do many podcasts together, let alone two, in the span of 2 weeks. But also for PW Ponderings...
premium podcasting for everyone.
That's right. And I publish something every single Thursday on pwponderings.com. Typically, it is a DVD review. But this week, I actually have a Phil Singer Games article that talks about the new Evolve set that came out, the new Freelance set that just came out. It touches a little bit on the other sets they have coming out as well. And I know they have their Atlanta Wrestling Entertainment and Tier 1 sets that just got released today. So be sure to check both of those out and read that article and all the other stuff that comes out on pwponderings.com.
Twitter.com/PWPonderings is the place to find us. You can, of course, get access to our links to various shows and reviews. You can also get results. Whenever I go to a show, I try to live tweet the results, particularly from AAW. I will be doing that with Freelance as well next month, plus the whole Shimmer weekend, which I know Sierra will anxiously be following me for. You can also follow me personally on twitter.com/JeromePWPEditor. I promise I will not try to pollute your timelines with Ricochet versus Will Ospreay talk, which I know Kevin Ford is very delighted by, and Sierra is as well. You can also support Pro Wrestling Ponderings by leaving a 4- or 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher Radio or wherever you get your podcasts. You can support us financially by going to High Spots and Amazon links. And you can go to pwponderings.com/store to get t-shirts as done by Brian, who is usually one of our regular co-hosts here. He's also a graphic designer, and you can follow him at Brian DeBrain. He did some fantastic designs for our Redbubble store, and we definitely would love your support. So for Kevin and Sierra, my name is Jerome Cusan. You've been listening to the Weekly Newscast. Have a good week.